Carl, why don't you tell us how you wound up in prison years ago?
Well, I don't believe anybody wakes up one morning and wants to do something horrific. So how I wound up in prison is actually a long story in one sense. But I don't think you want all of the details. But as a result of small decisions and lifestyle that I was living, I made poorer and poorer decisions until eventually I got into an argument with somebody that I'd caught stealing from me. His name was John Nicholson. We got into an argument, and he'd also stolen some things from some friends of mine, and I wound up killing him over it. I still don't like him. You know, I will never, you know, we weren't close friends. We knew each other. I will never change that I come to like him, but the fact is he didn't deserve to die for that.
So as a result, you were convicted of second-degree murder.
Yes, I was. The San Mateo County Sheriff's Department did the investigation. They once they identified the body, they basically went back to his last known address and questioned everybody that they could find who knew him. And eventually, the circle widened until they found me.
And
they actually arrested or started to arrest the wrong person, and I couldn't. In good conscience, I couldn't let somebody else go to prison for it, so I confessed at that point.
And you were sentenced for how long, Carl?
I was sentenced to 15 to life.
And you were released?
I was released, it will be 2 years ago, the latter part of this month. I was released June 24th of 2009.
Carl, tell me how many years of your sentence you served.
Nearly 25. I was actually in prison, not counting the county jail time, for 24 years, 1 month, and 16 days. Not that I was counting.
Well, thank you. Alex, what about you?
Yes, Carol. My situation was also tragic. I was a United States Marine Corps non-commissioned officer in 1983, and in March of 1983, I went with a group of Marines to the residence of a local drug dealer, and I was the youngest Marine. I walked into the apartment, and as soon as I entered the residence, a guy got up. And when he stood up, I actually shot him. I was not intending to hurt anyone that day.
Why did you shoot, and what did you think was happening?
What I actually thought was happening was because, as I said before, you know, I didn't really have a clear understanding of, you know, how drug dealers operated and all that. So I was just on edge thinking that, you know, I was just so heightened. And, you know, it was just in the moment. And I thought that there were guns. I actually thought that I was about to be fired upon. He died as a result of my actions. And for that, I'll always regret my actions of that day.
So you, too, were found guilty of second-degree murder.
Yes, I was.
And sentenced for how long, Alex?
15 years to life in prison.
And you actually served, I know, quite a few more years than that.
Yes, Carol, as a matter of fact, 28 years. And the presiding commissioner of the Board of Parole Hearings, when he found me suitable, he actually alluded to the point that I had served 14 years over my sentence.
And you've been you're actually newly released just a couple of months ago, is that right?
Yes, 2 months ago, as a matter of fact, Carol, I'm sitting here 2 months mm-hmm. out of prison.
Well, I wanted to ask both of you to just briefly tell me something about your childhood. Did you have childhoods where conflict and violence was a constant? Carl, what about you?
No, I don't have that as any part of an excuse. My father died when I was fairly young. I was 12. But no, there was no particular violence in my home. Neither, my father drank very lightly, my mother not at all. She remarried when I was 15, and my stepfather was, we didn't get along because I was in adolescence, but he was never violent or abusive or anything like that. There's nothing about my childhood I can look back and blame any of this on.
And what about you, Alex?
Well, yes, I actually grew up in Chicago, and it was, to put it mildly, we were not financially well off. But I should preface by saying that I do not believe past conditions predetermine my present. So, but to go to the point of your question, I experienced violence rather traumatically when I was 16 years old. I had been doing pretty well in school, went to a party one night, and at the party, there was drinking going on. I left the party at about 11. The party was on the other side of town, in the northern side of Chicago. I had to get back to the south side. And so I took the long journey back to the south side by the elevated train. And when I departed from the train, I was accosted by three individuals. Subsequently, I was stabbed. They took my belongings and actually tossed me over the side of the platform. So I fell 16 feet to the ground. Collarbone was broke. I wasn't found until the next morning at about 5 o'clock. When I was found, I was pronounced dead on arrival at the county hospital. Had it not been for a nurse who, I wish I hadn't known her name now, I believe Miss Williams. She alerted the staff that she thought I was alive, and sure enough, I was alive. Surgery was done, but I had no feelings from the neck down. 3 months, rehabilitation. They thought I would never walk again, but I did walk.
Mm-hmm. Your incarcerations for both of you were your first experience, and I'm wondering, when each of you entered prison, did you witness and experience violence in prison? Carl?
Yeah, I think it's probably true of everyone with a long sentence. The way California prisons are run, the longer a person's sentence is, the higher custody level they are. So we go to relatively violent prisons. Just by luck, when I went through the reception center, neither San Quentin nor Folsom was accepting new commitments, so I wound up at Soledad, CTF Soledad. My first year in prison, just kind of out of curiosity, I kept track. We were locked down. I was locked down either one day more or one day less than 6 months. I don't remember which one it was, but it was almost exactly 6 months. And because I was listed as white on the prison records, I was locked down a lot less than the African Americans or the Hispanics were. There were constant stabbings or fights, or most of them were minor. I mean, they weren't life-threatening things. You know, people weren't killed routinely, but there was constant violence.
Let me just continue with you for a moment, Carl. How and why did you initially go to an AVP, Alternatives to Violence Project group?
Well, there are two different things that were at work there. One of them was early on in my sentence, it dawned on me that I needed to make changes in myself, that what I had done was wrong, and I needed to look at myself. So I was, over the years, as opportunities arose, I took advantage of ways to look at my actions and myself and make those changes. The other factor at work was, of course, that documentation for the parole board of active self-help work, making an effort to improve ourselves, is worthwhile. So those two, when AVP came available to me, it was while I was at San Quentin, it was an obvious thing for me to do because it was available. It was there was the possibility that it would be beneficial to me, and it would definitely be beneficial to have the documentation on my record that I was making an effort.
James Alexander, when you entered prison for the first time in your life, and you were there for so many years, did you have experiences yourself or at least witness violence and conflict?
Oh, yes, a great deal. Well, you should know that when I first entered prison, you know, I was shaking in my boots, literally. I didn't know what to expect. All I had knew about prison was, you know, what I saw on television. So, you know, I was very, very afraid. My first encounter with personal violence was actually out on the big recreational yard of Soledad Prison in California. One of the inmates actually attacked myself and another inmate, and I was kicked in the face and bloody and all that. And then it came the response. In prison, when violence is done, at least nearly 30 years ago, it was almost a given that there would be retaliation, especially if the violence was meted out by a person of a different race. So I, in fact, participated once again in a violent incident, which did not lead to the loss of life, but still it was violent.
So how did you find your way to an AVP group in prison?
Wow. It took about 12 years, Carol. 12 years to find an organization, a group of people that actually practice what they preach. They preach community building, caring about others, treating people as though they were human beings. I found that in 1995 at San Quentin State Prison.
What did you think for the first time, Alex, when you went to a workshop or one of those groups? Did you think, hey, that's for me, I want to be a part of this?
I could not believe that people actually cared about people in prison. You know, when you find someone to treat you like a human being, not like you are just someone to be thrown away, it has an impact on you, Curl. And it had a great impact on me.
What was some of the things that you saw and heard at the very beginning that most struck you? Besides, along with the fact that you couldn't believe people could care so much about people in prison.
For me, it was the exercises where you learn about the different triggers or things that, you know, get people angry. I've been out of prison for 2 months, and I see anger as I'm driving on a highway. I drive kind of slowly now because I really respect and value human life. But people who drive behind me are going so fast and so quick that they get so angry. It's just unbelievable. But Carol, to your question, I think alternatives to violence, they give a caring attitude. They give you a feeling of belonging. And the love that is extended is genuine. So I think, you know, I think alternatives to violence is just an organization which is just uniquely competent and able to reach the very core of the human being and make them feel as though they're valued.
Carl Irons, what did you think when you attended your first meeting and group? What do you remember there that struck you?
The fact that the people cared enough to make the effort, the people being treated like a human being, because in prison often we're not. And like I say, there are other programs that bring in people from the outside, from the community. They don't just talk about, treating people decently and all of that, or their faith or what they're doing. They live it. And AVP is one of those situations. The fact that AVP is an experiential workshop rather than just like lectures or something made it a lot more valuable for me. It gave me the opportunity to really explore how it applied to me. And one of the values of AVP was the fact that we explored what constituted violence. Some of the obvious things, fighting and, physical violence are there, and everybody recognizes it. But it opened some discussion about, is drug use violence? Well, yeah, we harm ourselves, and generally people using drugs and alcohol harm the people around them, their families and friends and stuff. So for me, it expanded that view of what constituted violence into a larger theater.
Well, Carl, what did you consider one of the more valuable skills that you picked up?
I think one of the most valuable skills for me was the use of eye messages. I'm fairly good size. I mean, I'm not the biggest guy in the world by any means, but when I was younger, I used my size to my advantage. If I had a disagreement with someone, I had a tendency to start the discussion with poking my finger in their chest and, look, you SOB. And oddly enough, that very seldom resulted in a satisfactory result. I mean, through AVP, I learned, but it made me aware that if I start the conversation with looking for a solution rather than a victory, that I was more likely to find a solution.
Were you able to then practice the skills that you learned and developed in the workshops? Were you able to actually use them in the prison itself?
Yeah, and that, like most things that we learn, it takes practice. I didn't leave the first workshop all cured and all better, but I'd learned some techniques, and it made me aware of some things that it made me aware of the need to approach things differently.
So, Alex, when you first began with Alternatives for Violence Project, what would you say was one of the more valuable skills that you learned and were able to use?
I would actually say assertive communication.
Can you explain that?
Well, being able to stand or sit across from an individual, look them in the eye, and understand that they are not your superior as far as being better than you, just because they may have, more money in their bank account, they may have a better suit and tie, they may know how to shoot a basketball like Michael Jordan or say a speech like President Obama. It doesn't mean that they are a better human being than you are. So if you start with from the place that you are equal with the person you're talking to, and you are valued just as they are valued, you are loved just as they are loved by their family and friends, if you enter into a conversation from that perspective, it's difficult to be angry, to be violent, not to hear that other person.
I don't know if I'm correct in my assumption, maybe that's what I'll call it, that it might be more challenging to use the skills of AVP in prison than it is once you get out of prison. And I'm wondering how that worked for you in terms of being, after starting AVP, being in prison for quite a number of years. How were you able to put your skills to practice with the other incarcerated men that were there?
Well, I don't know if your assumption is incorrect, but I would say that it was easier for me to actually speak with prisoners to talk to them, even in an environment which breeds negativity, I think it was easier. The 2 months that I've actually been in society, outside prison walls, these 2 months, I've had to speak with individuals who have lived their whole lives, busy schedules, raising families, you know, doing the things of life. And I've had to speak to them in a manner which I think shows that, you know, don't look at me as the formerly incarcerated person. You know, look at me as a human being trying to speak with you. But it's almost like they see us, not all, I shouldn't say that, because I live amongst a wonderful community of friends. But some other people, it's almost like they look at a scarlet letter, you know. Wow, he was formerly incarcerated. You know, it's almost like the fear, because I guess this is a fear-based society, but the fear that is evident in their voice, their mannerism, is palpable. And I wish I could change that.
Well, let me ask you, Alex, what do you think people who return to society from prison have to offer in a positive way that wouldn't occur to most people?
I think the understanding of how precious human life is, how valuable each encounter with friends, family, associates, how we shouldn't take anything for granted, how it all means so much. It's almost like you live in a community, but you're isolated. You don't involve yourselves in social interests. I mean, self-interest is great, but when self-interest meets social interest, then the change in the community truly happens.
Alex, when those people show fear, do you try anything to put them at ease, or do you just move on?
Well, I guess Carl can attest to the fact that I smile so much. What do you think about that, Carl?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
the first thing anyone notices about Alex, he always has a smile on his face.
So I don't know if my own natural demeanor is enough to put people at ease, but I make a point of whatever I say or do, I make a point of, you know, I love the human spirit that resides within you. Of course, your actions, you know, you blowing the horn loud at me because I'm driving too slow, or I'm getting flipped off because, you know, I'm trying to find directions. You know, those are your actions. It does not take away from the valuable human being that you are.
I'd like you to just talk a little bit about the names that you give yourselves when you're in ABP. And Carl, can you tell us about your name and what that means?
We give ourselves adjective names in AVP, and the idea is that it'll be an adjective, a positive adjective. My name for years, from the very beginning, has been Casual Carl. I chose that name because for me it's a reminder that I wound up in prison because I took life much too seriously. It's a reminder to me to be more relaxed, that the BS of life is not that important.
So that those names serve as affirmations, in a sense.
Right. We do it as something that's an alliteration of the name, just to make it easy to remember. It helps each of us when we're in a new workshop together, a bunch of people we haven't met before and don't know. It helps us remember those names and who's who. But it's a positive affirmation of some aspect of either who we are or who we want to be.
What about you, Alex?
Well, Carol, hold on to your seat.
I'm holding.
I chose the name Attractive Alex. And the reason I chose Attractive Alex was because...
Well, he is attractive.
Well, no. Most things that I had done in my life before AVP was pretty ugly, to say the least. And I wanted to constantly remind myself that I would attract that which is positive and good and really uplifts the human spirit. And the things that are not so good, I would not like to attract. So Attractive Alex was just a way to remind myself of that. However, can you imagine me sitting in a room with about 25 guys whose arms is the size of Carl's head, and you know, here they sitting there looking at me and says, "Do you think we're going to call this guy attractive?" So you have to have a certain amount of courage, Curl, to actually say attractive Alex. And so some of these guys would actually say at the beginning of the workshop, "There's no way I'm going to call this guy attractive." And by the third day, they were saying, "Attractive Alex, I'm so glad that you were at this workshop. It's amazing, Curl."
Mm-hmm. I would think maybe you didn't let these names when you were in prison get outside of the quarters in which you were having your meeting. Or did you, and have reactions from the other prisoners?
Yeah, people on the outside in the prison yards and in the dining facility and other places within the prison, sometimes they would, you know the name. "Oh, that's Attractive Alex. We've heard about this guy," you know, or something like that. I've always, you know, had positive responses about it, you know. I don't know, Carl, maybe.
Well, by the time I went through AVP, the program was so well known at San Quentin, it was pretty open. There was no particular need to keep any of it private or confidential. I mean, the names, that is, yeah. Personal stories we always keep confidential, but I mean, as far as the adjective names and that kind of stuff, that was kind of public knowledge.
You know, Carol, interesting, I just thought of something when you were asking your question about the adjective names and it's getting out into the rest of the prison. You know, there may be a misnomer as far as, you know, guys who talk about alternatives to violence and just generally promote peace. Peace requires a certain amount of courage. I don't think, at least in my experience, you don't find too many people who are committed to peace and not be courageous individuals. You have to have a certain amount of moxie to be committed to peace. And it is my view that, you know, if you love peace, you would definitely be passionate about Alternatives to Violence Project.
I agree.
Reducing violence is one of the goals of AVP, and I want to know what that actually means when one is in prison, and was hoping that you can describe what that looks like or feels like from an incarcerated person's perspective. And did AVP really seem to impact the level of violence in prison? So if you can answer that, how and why do you think it worked, and give us an idea from your own perspective?
Yeah, I've noticed the reduction of violence. In the years that I've been in prison, in the beginning, it was so much violence. I found Alternatives to Violence Project in 1995. The amount of violence prior to that would just scare the living daylights out of any clear-thinking human being. But something happened in the prison where I was at, San Quentin. When you have different races of individuals in the same workshops, and these individuals hug each other, talk to each other, communicate on the most real level that two human beings can communicate on, there is something that develops. And when they leave out of that workshop and go back into the prison environment, it has to manifest even in that larger environment, because I can't look at Carl any longer as being different from me. I have to look at Carl now as being a human being who has the same desires and needs and wants as I do, who feels the same emotions as I do. And so it has that type of an effect, like a wave. It goes out. So I think that the workshop is beneficial, and it has had long-term impact because of that, because that seed has not stopped growing and that wave has not resided. It keeps going out.
How many folks actually participated in AVP in the prison, approximately? The reason I'm asking is just to try to get a sense if there were enough people involved with AVP to really make a difference in what happens throughout the prison population. What about you, Carl? Do you have a sense?
My personal involvement with AVP was primarily at San Quentin, but over the years, with support of the administration, the state head of corrections and people like that, AVP has now spread to about half of the prisons in California. So I have no idea how many people have been through it, but it's affecting a lot of individuals, and I think it's making a fairly big difference. When it first went into California State Prison at Solano, I was lucky enough to be chosen because the program didn't exist there. They were looking for trained facilitators who had been trained at some other place to help start it, and I was fortunate enough to help facilitate the first two workshops there. I was actually on the level two side, which is a lower custody level, and they made arrangements for me to go over to the level three, a higher custody level, you know, to work as a facilitator. I had been there as an inmate years before and ran into people that I'd known back then. It was kind of a nice experience. And I think it was valuable for them to see the changes in me because they had known me when I was at a different stage in my life. So, yeah, I don't think I've got any hard answers, any numbers or anything like that for you, but I think it is making a difference because it is spreading and a number of people have been through the program. Back to kind of your earlier question about whether it's or a different approach to this about how it's changing the violence in prison. I have only limited ability to influence anyone other than myself, but AVP has made it easier for me to deal with my whether it's short-temperedness or, you know, all of those aspects. By looking at what constitutes violence, I've broadened my the scope of what I look at in my own life. AVP has made it easier for me to deal with that, and to the extent that I have less violence in myself and in my life, I think that spreads out. Was it Gandhi that said, "Be the change you want to see"? Mm-hmm. I think by changing my own life, the way I interact with people, the way I treat people, that influences the people around me. They leave interactions with me with less tension or resentment or pressure like that. So just as violence kind of expands in an expanding ring, it propagates. Lack of violence, peace, can expand and propagate the same way.
Other than preparing inmates for the outside, why is it important for a program like AVP to strive to reduce violence inside prison? Why should society care about that? Alex?
Wow, thank you, Carolyn. I think that's a very important question. And it strikes to the heart of why we participate in this work. And that is because, especially in California, you're finna have a lot of inmates that's going to be transitioning back into society because of financial restraints and changes in leadership and direction. A lot of inmates are about to be coming into our communities. So alternatives to violence, even though it planted a seed, you know, we need to continue to nurture the gifts that a lot of these men have received while in prison, as far as treating other people respectfully, valuing other people's property. So organizations like Alternative to Violence can play a huge role as men transition into the community by community workshops. Your ordinary Joe who goes to work, you know, take 3 days out of his life and take an Alternatives to Violence Project workshop. So they will have a better understanding of how to actually treat their fellow human beings, which are some of these formerly incarcerated individuals that's going to be coming back to society. So it's not altogether altruistic. You know, you're helping, they're helping, and it's a community again. You know, formerly incarcerated individuals have been isolated from society for a great many years. This is the opportunity to welcome people back. You know, let us forgive. Let us not forget. Let us give them the second opportunity. Or I don't know how to say it, but can we embrace peace by treating everybody like human beings, giving them that opportunity?
If I can add something, I was thinking about the question you asked as Alex was talking. And I don't think the preparing people to transition back into the community and why we should try to reduce violence in prison, I don't think those two subjects are easily separable. They're very closely intertwined. And one of the obvious benefits is that when people come out of prison, they're better able to make that transition. But the reason we should treat them, we should try to reduce violence in prison and offer things like AVP to them in prison, is because the more we fall into the trap of dividing us from them, the more insidious that becomes. If we fall into the trap of thinking because they're in prison, they don't deserve the same treatment, they're not human beings in some respect, the easier it is to start thinking, well, the person down the street from me is a different race, so he's somehow not quite my equal, or the person who lives across town because it's a different part of town, or the different socioeconomic status and all of those things. The more we allow ourselves to divide us from them, the more that creeps into society as a whole.
Good point, Carl. And separation, that's one of the things that I always speak about, is how separation keeps people in that negative sense, you know, that angry sense. Okay, I can blame, you know, my troubles on this or that. You know, I don't have to, you know, accept responsibility or take responsibility for, you know, everything that's going on in my life. So one of the jokes that I always make is there should be no more separation. You know, I used to say the logical left and the emotional right. Well, of course, the people on the left are very logical. They look at these plans and look at things for what they are, and they say, well, how can we change this? Whereas the emotional right looks at things and say, well, let's see if we can, you know, find where it's something that we can highlight to just paint on something. But that's a separation, so we can't get into any separation. So no more will I say logical left and emotional right. I'll just say, you know, we all should come together and understand that, you know, life is not as it used to be. You know, the world is much smaller. You know, there's no islands. We have to take care of each other.
Since leaving prison, do you find that you have to tell the story of your crimes, and is it hard to tell it, and what kind of reaction do you get, Carl?
Well, the short answer to that is yes, no, and maybe. I believe my experience is valuable. Not everyone is prepared to hear it. It depends on the circumstances. For example, if I'm helping to facilitate a community workshop, my experience, the time I spend in prison, is one of the draws four people from the community to attend that workshop because people are curious about it. So it's a valuable experience for me to share. There's a trap there that if I'm not careful, I can make the workshop all about me and that experience rather than using that as something for the benefit of the community and for the benefit of the workshop. Most of the people that I'm around know about my background. I don't make any particular effort to hide it. To try to keep it concealed would cause my sense of integrity to suffer. I treat it, if the subject comes up, if it's appropriate, I'm very open about it. But I don't try to push it on people because not every situation and not every person is ready. Yeah.
What does being honest and that openness to others teach us about making peace in our daily lives?
I don't have a good answer to that. I know if I'm going to have real friends and people who are close to me, they have to know who I really am, and my experience is part of that. So in that sense, I have to be open with them. Otherwise, it's a very superficial relationships. And that openness brings an internal peace for me because I don't have a facade to maintain.
Alex, what do you have to add in terms of the question I had just put to Carl about telling your story once you left prison?
Well, it's amazing that you say that, Carl, that you asked that question, because I've been doing just that. I've been going around speaking in 2 months. I've spoken to just so many people. Recently, I spoke to a classroom, and young individuals, 12 years old, 14 years old, and I always impart that, you know, what I did did not just affect my life. My actions affected so many people. People that care about me, that cared about the person who I harmed. So I have to be genuine and honest in my discussions, because people need to be able to see what transpired in order so they can say, well, listen, I don't want to go down that road. I don't want to let a moment of terrible choices impact so many people's lives. Yeah, so that's what I get to do. But, Carol, we should not forget that there are so many individuals who are parole ready that are still incarcerated that didn't have a community of friends that I have, that were not able to successfully get their release from prison, that are still struggling and fighting, that have changed their lives and are ready to be released from prison, and the struggle continues. So I don't want to sit here and make it seem like I'm some a unique example of someone who has ventured to change their life. I mean, there's many people that are in our prison system.
Now that I've thought about it a while, I think Alex has touched on something that's valuable for me. Generally speaking, if people meet me and I'm reasonably sociable and presentable and all of that, you know, I'm not probably most people's idea of the typical prison inmate. If people get to know me and then get to know my story, I think it shows them that just because a person has done something horrific in their life doesn't mean necessarily that they're horrible people. What I did was horrific. It was an awful thing to do. And I can never change it. But I can try to be a decent person. And there, I believe interaction with me and my openness about my past helps people understand that not everybody who's done something terrible is necessarily a terrible person.
What are the goals for each of you? What are you wanting to do with your life besides your active participation in AVP? Carl?
I'm basically uneducated or self-educated, so I've returned to school. If I keep at it long enough, I'll get a degree and I won't be the only uneducated person I know. I'm hoping to develop meaningful relationships, including someday a meaningful romantic relationship, and settle down and live a fairly normal life, what's left of it. I'm 60 now, and I'm not going to live forever. I can't change anything I've done in the past, but I hope to make the world a little better in the ways that I can.
Thank you, Carl. What about you, Alex?
Well, thank you for your question, Carl, and I must say that I owe a tremendous amount. So, I want to continue in the work. I want to continue to promote peace. I want to continue to tell my story. I want to continue to let people know that we are all human beings. What we have done, the actions we have committed may have been terrible, but life is still present, and we are still availing ourselves of the interactions with others. So let us not cease to be a community. So I want to actually go around and speak about this and speak about the individuals who are still in prison, who need to transition from prison back into our communities. So I think that's my calling, and that's the way I'm going to try to give back. And I'm going to continue this work until I have no breath in me, because I am passionate about peace. I love peace. And thank you for this opportunity, Carl. I really appreciate you.
I've been speaking today to Carl Irons and James Alexander. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Carol, for this opportunity.
Yes, thank you so much, Carol. And keep promoting peace.